Good morning to everyone here at the Capitol. This is a hearing of the House Tribal Affairs Committee. We will now come to order. The time is 8:08 a.m. Thursday, March 5th, 2026 in Capitol Room 106. Sorry for the late start. It is still snowing in Juneau, so I'm really glad that everyone got here safely and just it'll be a great hearing today. Members present for the House Tribal Affairs are Representative Schwanke, Representative Story, Representative Carrick, Representative Underwood, and myself, Chair Dybert. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum. To conduct business, a quick reminder to please silence your cell phones. Before we begin, I'd like to thank Jordan Nicholson, the Tribal Affairs Secretary from Records, and Chloe Miller from the Juneau LIO for staffing the committee today. So this morning we have two items on the agenda. We will start this morning with a presentation from Spruce Root, an indigenous institution in Southeast Alaska that provides individuals with business development resources and support. Spruce Root's Executive Director, Alana Peterson, today will be joining us virtually on Teams. Following Spruce Root's presentation, we will be hearing from Chloe Kavanaugh, who is the owner of Black and White Raven Company, on her experience running a small indigenous-owned business right here in Juneau. She will also be sharing more on the community work and mentorship that she provides through her business. We're happy to have her here in person this morning. A quick note before we begin, committee will have a hard stop at 9:45 this morning to allow committee members time between this hearing, and we have floor this morning at 10:30. With that, we will proceed with today's agenda. So let's see. Alana, Ms. Peterson, if you could hear me, welcome to Tribal Affairs.
Good morning.
Great. We can hear you loud and clear. Please proceed with your beautiful presentation.
All right. Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Yake Tsutat. For the record, my name is Elena Peterson. I'm the Executive Director for Spruce Root. And I am calling in this morning from rainy Sitka-Kwan, Sitka, which is my hometown and where I reside with my family. I'm excited and pleased to be here with you all today to share a bit more with you about Spruce Root, the services we provide, and how we are working to build a stronger indigenous-based economy in Southeast Alaska. And with that, I will ask to move to the next slide. So we'll today just cover briefly, I'm gonna try to keep my comments brief, but a little bit about background of Spruce Root, what we do, who we are, our programs, and I'm gonna highlight two programs that I wanted to bring to this body this morning and just share. And I think it'll also complement some of the things that Chloe will say. Moving into the next slide, you can see as a nonprofit, we're what's called a Community Development Financial Institution, or a CDFI. And this is a designation we get through the U.S. Department of Treasury. We are, as I said, a 501c3, so our mission is to be a driver of a regenerative economy across Southeast Alaska so that our communities can forge futures that are grounded in what is a very uniquely indigenous place. And we have a set of values that guide everything that we do. And in those values, they're really representative of this idea of balance or duality, which is central to our indigenous cultures. And so with each value, there's sort of a counter value or something to offset it. So balance meets progress over perfection. So you get the idea. And this truly does guide everything that we do. Next slide, please. You'll see that we were created by Sea Alaska in 2012. Sea Alaska at the time really wanted to invest more in the region and put more of their resources into Southeast Alaska's economy and divest from some of the investments they had made that were not focused in Southeast Alaska. And with that, they created Spruce Root as a way to invest in Indigenous businesses. And so we started very small. I was an employee at Sea Alaska when I got going in 2013. And we wrote grants and worked to get our CDFI status. And it took sort of a slow growth over about 4 or 5 years till we got to the point where we were at about $1 million fundraise to be able to lend out. And then by 2018, we had established ourselves as a formal CDFI. We got that designation through the U.S. Department of Treasury. And at that time, we were really growing. We also took on the ownership of the Sustainable Southeast Partnership as a program of Spruce Root. This partnership I'll talk more about later in my presentation, but just to give you an idea of the timeline of when that transition occurred. And then by 2021, we launched the Seacoast Trust, which is a funding mechanism that is intended to help sustain our programs through the future. And then by 2024, we started to build out our second, our second really robust five-year strategic plan, and we are implementing that now today. Next slide, we can look at our strategic plan a little bit closer. It's really oriented around four main goals. Indigenous-led economic innovation is the first one. We're really trying to utilize Indigenous knowledge and drive innovation in the region to address the economic challenges in Southeast Alaska. And so that is sort of a foundation of a lot of the work that we're doing today. The next goal is to strengthen regional partnerships. So we really do believe that we cannot do this alone. We must build programs and projects and initiatives that are based on collaboration. So we really do value our approach to building relationships and networks across Southeast Alaska so that we can support that. And the next one is catalyzing sustainable investment. So we really believe that by attracting investment into the region and helping deploy that in many different ways, it will help sustain and grow the economy in the region over the future. And that's a major role that we see Spruce Root can play. And then the last goal is really focusing on how we show up over time and really putting a lot of emphasis in accountability and action. So being committed to being a transparent organization in all that we do and really supporting that value with you know, modeling by doing. And so this is something that I'm excited to continue to show, but we're in a new era of Spruce Root. Next slide. So our board of directors is comprised of Indigenous leaders, you all probably know. It's a really wonderful group of individuals who are very committed to our mission, and they volunteer significant amounts of their time to guide and lead this organization. And I truly appreciate everything they do. And they have a lot of different knowledge and skills and background, which is really a big part of what helps guide a holistic, you know, view and leadership of the organization. And so if you look at Spruce Root compared to other CDFIs, not only in Alaska, but also across the country, we're very unique and different. And I think that it's because we built an organization that is based in place. It's unique to this place. It's unique to the people that live here. And I think that that's also really because of the guidance that our board offers. So next slide, we also have a beautiful team of amazing people who work all across Southeast Alaska. We're very spread out. Our headquarters is in Juneau, in the Sea Alaska building on the second floor. Please come find us anytime. But like myself, many of us are spread in communities across the region, which is really important to how we do our work really well. We know we cannot support our communities if we cannot be invested and involved in those communities as well. So I really appreciate all the hard work of our staff, and it's really truly a joy to get to work with such amazing people who are dedicated to the mission. And on the next slide, you'll see just an overview of the main programs that we have. So I talk about them as three main programs. It's our loan services, our business and client services, and the Sustainable Southeast Partnership. This fourth box, Seacoast Trust, is a funding model. It's not really a program, but it deserves its own box. It is big. And if we move into the next slide, I'll dive a little deeper into the loan services program. And so this is really what houses the CDFI, what gives us the ability to provide small business loans to entrepreneurs. And so we have been growing this slowly over time. We are currently at over 5 million in our loan portfolio today of active loans, and we cannot keep up with demand. We have two main loan products, a small microloan up to $50,000. This one is a bit more easy to access. It doesn't require a full business plan, and it's a bit more based on some auto decisioning, meaning like if your credit score meets a certain threshold and you have, you can provide a few pieces of documentation, your income, proof of income, then you can fairly quickly get a loan up to $50,000 to support your business. And then we have bigger loans up to $500,000, and this does require a full application and business plan and is a bit more of a robust process. We don't just lend and walk away. We are very invested in the businesses that we support financially. So we provide a high level of what we call technical assistance, both prior to, during, and after loan closing. And so after loan closing, what does this look like? This looks like a dedicated team of people that really follow up and connect with the entrepreneurs to understand where they're at, how we can continue to support them, offer guidance, and we want to be part of the entrepreneur's journey as much as they need. And so we really see ourselves as in a relationship with them and really try to honor that throughout the life of the loan. And we do focus on lending that meets our mission. So we have a robust lending policy that guides the loan approvals that we make. And so there are certain loans that we won't make, things that are federally or state law, like that break the law. Obviously, we wouldn't lend in those areas. But we also want to make sure that businesses are contributing to positive outcomes in our communities, positive outcomes in the environment. And so you see that when you look at our portfolio of loans, like these are people in the communities who really want to contribute positively and have that regenerative impact through the operations of their business. Next slide. So a lot of the work that we do is in our business and client services program. This program is where we really started early on. When we started the nonprofit, we thought, okay, we'll find out who the entrepreneurs are and we'll start lending to them. But it became pretty clear people were debt averse and they didn't necessarily just want capital. They wanted support. Small business entrepreneurs in Southeast are isolated. They have a lot of challenges to overcome to be successful. And so more than capital, a lot of times they're looking for a network. They're looking for capacity and skill building opportunities. And they're looking for connections to other individuals or experts that can support their business in a positive way. And so we built a series of support services that help for that. The business competition Path to Prosperity is what we're pretty well known for. And that has been going on for, I think, over 15 years now. We also have our resilience circles, which I'll dive into, but this is an exciting newer program that's a year-long program for Indigenous entrepreneurs. We provide one-on-one business coaching. And so just in this, like, I think last year we did over 600 hours of one-on-one business coaching. But this to me is some of the most exciting work that we do, because we sit down and we work very intimately with entrepreneurs on whatever it is they need. If it's getting their business license or going over their financials or talking about their marketing strategy, or maybe it's just helping them navigate a difficult situation with staff or, negotiating a lease agreement. And so that business coaching is really invaluable. And we do all of this, all of these programs are no cost to the entrepreneur. Our financial wellness program is really great and open to all individuals, whether you own a business or not. And this includes workshops, but also one-on-one financial advising and coaching, or sorry, financial planning and coaching. And then we have a lot of different group workshop programs where we're training people in business themes and skills, workforce development related themes and skills, soft skills, leadership skills, and you might see announcements of those programs all across the region. Next slide. I just want to briefly touch on resilient circles. So as I mentioned, this is a newer program that we piloted in 2024 and 2025. And it is designed by Spruce Root as a response to a request that we kept seeing from our Indigenous entrepreneurs. And we need something that's tailored to the realities of being an Indigenous entrepreneur in Southeast Alaska. And as one myself, I know what that feels like. And so we wanted a program that could be trauma-informed, that could really create a major impact on one individual over a course of a year, because we know that those entrepreneurs will then, if they're able to work on themselves and work on their business all at the same time and go back into their communities a stronger and better leader, that ripple effect of that program will have major impacts. And so that's what we've tried to develop with this program. If you go to the next slide, it's a framework that basically where these entrepreneurs get nominated by someone in their community to participate in this year-long program. We bring them together. It's usually 8 to 10 entrepreneurs. We bring them together over the course of a year, 4 different times for in-person gatherings, where we train them on business-related tools and topics, financial wellness, network building, cultural related topics and themes. We were just in Yakutat a couple weeks ago with the current cohort, and they got to go seal hunting and learned more about the community's traditions and culture in Yakutat, and all while being part of a 3-day training program that really helps them move their businesses forward. And we bring in different practitioners from across the region, people who have expertise in a variety of fields, whether it be language or arts or culture or business-related themes like HR, attorney support, or marketing support. We also bring in mental health providers and physical wellness providers. And then each entrepreneur over the course of that year, in between those in-person trainings, are also getting a lot of one-on-one support from the practitioners through coaching. All right, I'm at the end. I'm so sorry. So the last program is the Sustainable Southeast Partnership. This is a collective impact network, and we are proud to be hosting this as a program of Spruce Root. This is really a big part of how we do what we do at Spruce Root, meaning we know we need to have connections to the people in the communities in order to best serve them. We build programs based on what people tell us they need and the support that they need. And a lot of the information that we get about this is coming through our network of the Sustainable Southeast Partnership. We do monthly virtual calls. We do 2 in-person convenings annually. And Spruce Root provides backbone services to the network so that it can function. And the network itself is working together to collaborate and develop projects and programs based on a variety of shared regional priorities and topic areas. And so basically everything that matters to people in this region is being worked on across this network. And it's really amazing to be part of it. And so what I wanted to share a little bit more about is the Scenarios Project. This is something that was developed through the Sustainable Southeast Partnership. And we have a short video, if we still have time to cue that up. Is that okay? All right.
Yeah, we have time. That.
Okay.
Storytelling has deep roots in our culture. It can help us imagine our past, understand our fears, and see our strengths. In the Possible Futures for Southeast Alaska planning exercise, we use stories developed by regional experts to explore an uncertain future for our communities and organizations. We'll look ahead at the next 25 years using the 4 stories as backdrops for your strategic plan. The stories aren't predictions, they're possibilities, designed to challenge your imagination and act as a wind tunnel for your planning documents. How do they fly and where do they fall apart? Let's take a look at our four scenarios. Geesh. Just as bull kelp can quickly dominate a marine ecosystem and crowd out other more delicate species, this scenario tells the story of a Southeast Alaska shaped by rapid growth. Demand for resources bring high-paying infrastructure projects along with power and priorities beyond the control of local communities. Shea. The spruce tree has a cycle of growth, dormancy, and renewal. In this scenario, mining and fishing industries suffer setbacks, and Southeast Alaska becomes almost entirely reliant on the cyclical nature of seasonal tourism. Kanata. Blueberries have indigenous roots and are abundant resources that feed people of many cultures. In this scenario, Southeast Alaska becomes home for a rapidly growing population of climate refugees. This growth comes with economic opportunities and an influx of new ideas and cultures, but rapid population growth also brings conflict over resources and services. Sucht. Devil's Club is a thorny and sacred medicinal plant. This scenario explores self-determination for Alaska Native people. In this story, we see a return to more traditional ways of life while industrial tourism and resource development projects fall by the wayside. Exploring these divergent possible futures will give you a chance to think more deeply about your strategic next steps. You'll identify threats and opportunities you may not have noticed, and you'll be more prepared to weather any passage ahead. Reach out to your friends at Spruce Root for more information on setting up a possible futures planning session. Gunath Chish.
Thank you. So yeah, as the video describes, this is a tool for future planning. And what I think is really exciting about it is it was developed by a group of 40 very diverse people that represented the folks across our region over the course of a year. And each of the stories has light and shadow. Each story is a tool that helps you consider perspectives different from your own. And so they're not meant to be visions or ideal states of what we want in the future. They're meant to challenge each of us in the way we think about what's possible in Southeast Alaska. And so I offer this to you all just to consider. I think it can serve nonprofits, it can serve business owners, it can serve a governing body like yourselves. So we really hope that folks turn to this tool as a way of providing a bit more insight into a strategic planning process or any type of future planning for a group of people in Southeast Alaska. And I get excited when I think about what would happen if many of us were using the same set of scenarios to plan for our future. It would be a pretty powerful thing to consider what that might mean if we could be more aligned in how we're thinking about what's possible and then adjusting what we do today to drive forward towards the future that we actually want to create. So I will, you can go forward to the next slide. The Seacoast Trust, I'll briefly mention, is a fund we, on the behalf of the Sustainable Southeast Partnership, have been growing. We're currently at a little over $30 million in the fund. This is a perpetual funding mechanism that will allow us to invest in the partnership annual budget into perpetuity. And so the Sustainable Southeast Partnership funds positions across the region, not at Spruce Root, positions that are housed at tribes or local municipalities or other types of NGOs. It funds projects across the region in many different thematic areas, including food security, natural resource management, economic development, energy reliance, or energy independence. And our goal is to get that to $100 million so that we can truly be funding the level of work that is the demand that's there in the partnership today. I think 2024 is the first year that we were able to deploy some earnings from interest to fund some of the work. So we continue to fundraise in the meantime while we're building that fund. We currently have about a $3 million annual budget for the Sustainable Southeast Partnership, and that's primarily funded through different grants and philanthropic funding sources. So if you go to the next slide, I think this is the I think the next slide has a little bit of information if you want to reach out to me or connect more with Spruce Root. And I really just appreciate the time this morning to share more with you, and I will stop there. And if there are questions, I'm happy to answer them. I'm also excited for Chloe to share more about what she does. She is a colleague and friend of mine, and she has a lot of great firsthand knowledge about what it's like to be an entrepreneur with Spruce Root, but also what it's like to support other Indigenous entrepreneurs in the region.
Ganoshchish Anabasi, for your presentation and your words. I have a few questions. This was a really great presentation, and you all are doing amazing work here in the Southeast. And I know I'm from the interior. I would just love to see this kind of entrepreneurship, this small business support in the interior. So this was very helpful for me, and I'm sure for other regions here in Alaska. Are there any questions? I know I have some. Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Dybert, and through the chair, thank you, Ms. Peterson, for your presentation of this really great program. And I don't know if you want to call it a program, but just a great entrepreneur-focused support for different businesses. And I was just hoping you could help refresh my memory, because I have been to a couple of gatherings with Spruce Root where they have highlighted some of the recipients. And one business that just is in my mind, I think, was based out of Sitka. And I talked to a business owner who got a grant or a loan she sort of had like a traveling healthcare business where she could go out and serve clients in their homes. I don't know if I'm remembering that correctly, but if you could possibly, my question is just, could you share some of the unique individuals? And I know we're going to hear from one next, but if you could just give me more of an idea of the things that you support, that would help me get a fuller picture. Thank you.
Ms. Peterson.
Thank you, through the chair. Thanks for the question, Senator Story. There are so many entrepreneurs. So we have supported fishermen. We see currently a lot of folks coming to us that are operating within the tourism industry. You know, so a lot of who we support usually represents the ebbs and flows of the economy and what's going on. We do support both Native and non-Native entrepreneurs. I do want to highlight that. But as a Native CDFI, the majority of our loan capital goes to Indigenous entrepreneurs, so Indigenous-owned businesses. That is a requirement of the CDFI fund, but that's also a commitment that our board has made in to ensure that capital is flowing to the rural Indigenous villages and to Indigenous-owned businesses. And so the one that you're referring to, I know the gal. She was in the Path to Prosperity competition, and I think you might have met her when we invited you to that reception. I think that's probably where you connect with her. I actually don't know where she's at. I haven't seen her in the past few years, but yeah, I do know that business. So she operates a healthcare service, you know, in-home service business, and she advocates for people who receive Medicare and Medicaid. And gosh, I learned so much from her about like the systems and what challenges people face. And so it was really cool to see her business and how she was able to fill a gap in the market that is about supporting elders and individuals who have disabilities who have to navigate such a challenging system just to get access to healthcare. And so she provided services for that. So restaurateurs, our largest loan to date, well, actually that might be different. I think we've done a larger one, but prior to this year, our largest loan to date was to Edith Johnson, also in Sitka. She runs Ludwig's and a catering business here in Sitka, and she is just an impressive young woman. And I was really excited that she was able to get that loan back in 2024. We also have launched the Tongass Energy Bank, which is funding projects in Southeast that will help decarbonize our communities and invest in energy-related projects. So that is, we currently have $8 million in capital for that, but we're hoping to grow that fund as well. And gosh, yeah, we support all types of businesses. I have a call on Tuesday with an individual who doesn't speak English. He only speaks Spanish, and I happen to speak Spanish. So I'm excited to get on that call and learn more about what he's doing and how we can support his business. So we really try to meet the needs of what's coming at us from the region. We often are taking on the clients that traditional institutions like banks don't feel are quite ready to work with them. And so we make sure that we're investing heavily in their skills so that they can be successful. But what we see from all of that as well is that we have a really low default rate because of that heavy support and technical assistance that they get.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. That question, Representative Schwanke.
I didn't have a question.
Okay, great. Representative Carrick.
Thank you, through the chair. I really appreciate the presentation this morning. I just wanted to ask if there's how interconnected a lot of the entrepreneurs are with other economic development organizations too, and how connected Spruce Root is with other innovation and economic development groups in Alaska. I know Launch Alaska is one. It's not really my wheelhouse. I don't know of a lot of them, but in Fairbanks, we have the Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation, and I know that there's regional hubs too. So just wanted to ask about how entrepreneurs are connecting both with Spruce Root and maybe other groups as well.
Ms. Peterson?
Through the chair, thank you for the question, Senator Carrick. Over the years, we've worked a lot with folks across the state or different organizations. In Fairbanks, the economic development entity that you mentioned, we worked a lot with them back when I first got going. And I haven't been as connected with them in recent years, but we definitely do a lot of learning together, I'd say, has been our approach. And we get asked a lot to come and do things across the state, and we really have to balance the request with our ability to meet the needs within our region. So we've been looking for creative ways to do more statewide work. So one example of that is our Path to Prosperity program. We actually partner with McKinley Alaska Growth Capital to create a statewide business competition. And so we did that the last few years. And this last year, we brought our 10 entrepreneurs, our cohort of 10, up to Anchorage to meet with all the other entrepreneurs that Alaska Growth Capital had brought in from across the state. And so there are 30 Indigenous entrepreneurs from all across Alaska that worked together over 3 days, got connected. And so that was really exciting to see. And we know that there's a lot of value in that. And through that program, they connect with a lot of other entities like Alaska Small Business Development, Launch Alaska, like you mentioned, other organizations across the state that are interested in supporting these entrepreneurs. Here in Southeast, we work really closely with Southeast Conference, Juneau Economic Development Corporation. Obviously, Sea Alaska is still a close partner. We work a lot with the tribes across the region, the village tribes, and some of the smaller ANCs as well. And we often are collaborating with local chambers to deliver products and programs within their community. And so, as I mentioned before, that the Sustainable Southeast Partnership has really been a core part of how we've been able to do our work well. And we've been asked a lot across the state, like, how do we replicate the SSP in our region? So we've also, over the past 2 years, been helping. We send a couple of our staff up to help train, advise, and mentor newer networks that are trying to spin up across the state that want to do something similar, create that collaborative approach. We follow a design called the Collective Impact Network. That's the framework of our network. And so you can look it up, but that is, you know, something that we've also been trying to help other regions across the state do is build that collective network approach to solving the challenges within your communities and to, you know, come up with new and innovative ideas for the communities that they represent based on the priorities of the people there.
Awesome. Just a thank you for the work that you do. And I agree with the chair that it would be really wonderful to see this expanded across all of our regions. So thank you.
Thank you
for your question, Representative Carrick. And I have a thought, a question. Let's see if I could wrap my brain around this question. When I was back in college a long time ago, I wanted to be an artist. I really wanted to, but it was very difficult. Art was very challenging. I ended up staying up late all night trying to do my art projects. But I remember back then there was a lot of, oh, you shouldn't go into art because, you know, you're not going to make money. You're not going to, it's not going to be a lucrative life, you know, a life job. And so that narrative was out there. And so we have a really, with that being said, we have a really great art program at UAF called the Native Arts Center. And it's run by Dacob Maynor. When I was there, it was run by Alvin Amison, who did an amazing job in just Indigenous art and in encouraging us to, like, bring out the best of us as artists. But my question is, do you work with, like, UA classes to, you know, like, overcome that narrative of, you know, art is lucrative, art is possible with our younger generation? I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah.
Thank you, Ms. Peterson. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, we do work a lot with artists. Most of our collaboration in that space is with Sealaska Heritage Institute. We have built some curriculum with them that we actually developed for the university, UAS. And so it's a class for artists, and we provide the business training. So we helped build the curriculum around how to run a successful arts business. And then we helped deliver it in partnership with Lily Hope. And I don't know that curriculum is still being taught today, but we do a lot of just business basics for artists workshops each year. There's just a lot of demand for that. And that's a big part of what we're sharing and helping them learn, is how to do this in a way that would meet the financial needs that you have. And that narrative, I feel you. I grew up in a Native arts household. My dad is a Native artist, Northwest Coast artist, and I always just wanted to be an artist, but I saw the reality of how hard it is to make ends meet as an artist. And so that was always a part of that narrative for me as well. So I really appreciate your share. But we do see a huge shift and a renaissance in Native arts. And so I don't think that narrative feels as apparent today. However, we do try in our workshops and our programs to really make sure entrepreneurs feel like have real clarity around their financial goals. So how much would you have to make to meet the needs that you have? And we really break down, you know, if you've ever done financial forecasting, if we really work with them to build that out and see what they would need to do, and then come up with product lines and strategies that would actually meet those goals. And that's where I think a lot of the disconnect is for artists. If you need to make a living off of this as your main income, then how much would you need to make? And let's reverse engineer it from there. And that is so much more helpful than this narrative that, like, well, it's very hard. Well, anything you do well is hard. Like, anything you dedicate yourself to is hard. And so with the internet nowadays, with so many other opportunities, it's much more possible to make money making art than it ever was. And so we really lean into that narrative. And I think that we see more evidence of that. Chloe's obviously evidence of that. And she works with a lot of artists, and I know can speak to this really well too.
Absolutely. Yeah, the internet has... I know that's where I go. I love going to Instagram and just typing in beaded earrings, and oh my goodness, like I could drop hundreds of dollars. Yeah, I really appreciate you explaining that. And we have a question from Representative Schwanke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Nicholson.
Peterson. Ms. Peterson.
My apologies. Okay. I want to thank you. What a great presentation. What a phenomenal opportunity. I would love to know if we have these types of organizations in other regions of the state. I represent Eastern Interior, a pretty large portion of rural Alaska in the interior. And I have a question. It's kind of, you didn't hit on it, so I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are. So one of the biggest needs that I keep hearing across the state is the need for additional senior and disabled housing and support. And I know that there's some pretty great new opportunities with licensing for creative homes. We have a complex care licensing opportunity now. And so I'm kind of curious if you have any entrepreneurs that you're working with in this space. Specifically, I'm interested in kind of two things, understanding how in this space, if there are Indigenous business owners that are moving in this space, I could see some pretty phenomenal opportunities to create facilities and programs where there's a cultural component, which is such a healing opportunity specifically for elders, and then focus on rural health transformation program opportunities, if that's something on your radar. So just curious about that.
That's a great question. Ms. Peterson, I don't know if you've heard of the Rural Health Transformation Program. We've been talking about a lot here at the Capitol.
Yeah. Through the chair, yes. Thank you, Senator Schwanke. We have heard of the program. I was just on a call about it yesterday. a lot of interest in submitting different applications for that funding. So I agree. This is a great opportunity for exactly what you're talking about. I hope folks are listening to this. This is one of the challenges, I think, is that when there's opportunity, it kind of lags in, as we see it, like there's not fast, you know, movers all the time. I have been working with an entrepreneur over the years who has been trying to build a facility. That's the only one that comes to mind. I'm not going to share their details because I just want to respect their privacy, but I do know of one person working on this right now. And it's a challenging business model, I'll say that much, but a very worthwhile one. We've been working with our partners. So we helped facilitate a SICA housing, affordable housing summit a few years ago, and that brought people from across the state to SITCA to talk about affordable housing. And so we're involved in that type of programming to try and come up with solutions and see where we can fit and support. And we also work closely with Hayakawu, which is another CDFI here in Southeast Alaska. They do housing financing. So we do business, they do housing. They also started recently a small business lending program, but they and we have been talking about how we might support one another. We could do a bridge loan for construction, for example, and then they can come in and pre-approve a mortgage. So that type of secure financing helps mitigate risk for both of us, but also get someone into a loan that would otherwise probably not be able to. Land, construction, there's a lot of variables that make it very challenging here, but we're very committed to supporting housing affordability as well as access for elders and long-term care and those sorts of things. And so, there's not quite enough happening, I would say, in the region, and I can't speak for the rest of the state, but I do know that that's an opportunity, and this funding could really support people's projects to do that. I don't know offhand of a project that is going to be submitted in Southeast to fund something like that, but I'm sure there are some people talking about it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Schwanke, for your question. Thank you, Ms. Peterson. I'm looking to the committee, and I think we are good to go. We're going to move to our next presenter. And Ms. Peterson, will you be online if further
Yes.
questions come up or thoughts or comments with our next guest that we could
Yes.
reach out to
Yep.
you as well?
I will be here. Yes, thank you.
Anna Bossi, thank you so much. And I hope to meet you in person, and just look forward to learning more about Spruce Roots, and we'll definitely visit the site and spread the word.
Likewise. Gonna cheese.
Anna Bossi. With that, we're going to take a brief at ease so that our next presenter, Ms. Chloe Kavanaugh, could come up and do her presentation. Briefities. All right, back on the record here in Tribal Affairs Committee, we are starting our second presentation with Ms. Chloe Kavanaugh. Please come forward and welcome to Tribal Affairs. Please put yourself on the record and proceed with your presentation, your beautiful presentation. Thank you. Welcome.
For the record, Chloe Kavanaugh, owner of Black and White Raven Company. I just want to start with Kunshish for having me here. And if there's at any point I make a mistake, please feel free to correct me. I'm here to learn just as much as here to teach you about my business a little bit. So it's my first time in this space, so I'm just super grateful.
Well, that's wonderful. Welcome. I'm honored that it's, I'm so happy it's here in Tribal Affairs. Yeah, welcome to the Capitol.
I'm going to start with my introduction. Plakshah Yuhat Duasak, Chak Mahatsati, Wasanehi Ayahat. My Tlingit name is Plakshah. The way it was told to me is it comes from a story about women working really hard, really fast to get things done. It translates to woman who moves mountains. My family, I'm Eagle Wolf, Wasanehi out of Cake, Alaska. I'm grateful to be here. So I started my business back in 2020 after my grandfather, Archie Kavanaugh, had passed in 2018. And I came back to Juneau during the pandemic thinking, okay, I'm carrying this grief and I'm also in the middle of a pandemic and thinking really about what my next steps in Juneau were going to look like. My grandfather was pursuing language, was a Tlingit carver and an incredible artist, and he had this dream when he was growing up in Cake was to have an album. And that became a reality when he met up with the guys from Redbone and he got to do his album, Black and White Raven. So moving forward, I started my business really honoring him and to talk about the impacts of generational love and generational success. And when the people in our lives and the people in our community decide to make choices and make spaces that allow for future generations to succeed. So I really wanted to honor him with my business and really, really started with him in my creative journey. He had a box of carving templates that my family was trying to decide what to do with. None of us are carvers, but I came from a marketing communications background and had experience in graphic design. And that really became a part of not only my grieving process, but my ability to connect more deeply with who my grandfather was at different points in his life. And I started pulling out each carving template and digitizing those carvings. And it was incredible to see when I would take one sketch or one carving template and I would put it online and someone would say, well, do you want to see the rest of the design, what it ended up looking like? He made this drum for our kindergarten class, or this drum was for our dance group, or this carving was actually for me. And it really created an opportunity to really see all the different ways my grandfather was involved in community and the way that I knew my grandfather for his pancakes and dancing in the kitchen. And really it was a wonderful time to be able to honor him. And as I started to create my own art and digitize his art, I wanted to make sure that I held the same values he did, which was giving back to community. And I started using portion of the proceeds to go to different causes. One year we paid for the fees for the kids in Cake to go to Open Gym for free through some of the art pieces that we sold. And one year the boys won their basketball high school championship and we paid for their rings. We pitched in with another artist and really have found ways over the years to just carry on his values and give back through my business and be grateful for the opportunities that I've had. So here's some of my art. The All Are Welcome Here came out of Louise Brady, and she was putting on the Herring Kweek over in Sitka, and she asked if I would design a piece of art to be hung up at the Kweek to let people know that they are welcome in this space, and that this was a space of love and healing. So I came up with the All Are Welcome Here design, and
I've really balanced traditional artwork with also modern Indigenous art, creating this character on a cell phone in the way that we exist today feels really important to me. So often I'm really grateful. I've seen this All Are Welcome Here hung up at UAS. I've seen it in stores around town. I've had teachers reach out to me that are really trying to cultivate safe and caring spaces in their schools and have asked, can I hang this up? And I'm just so grateful for the reach that it's had and the community that it continues to create. This second image here is actually my grandfather's Eagle Man mask that I decided to digitize and put into artwork there. A lot of the things that my grandpa faced early in his career were much more difficult than I've had to face now. When he started carving and making masks and making hats, he actually had the flicker feathers removed from his hat. And the difficulties that he faced being an Indigenous man and pursuing his traditional art form, I really want to honor where I'm at today because of the hardships that he's faced. The Protect the Tongass came out of Joel Jackson asking me if I would create a design for Protect the Tongass, and really a lot of the artwork that I've created is out of asks from the community or things that I feel or things that I want to see represented. And so I'm really grateful that it's really created not only just that healing process, but that voice and that ability to engage and find ways that community relates to the things that we hold in value. So here are some of the design projects that I've also been a part of. There's a lot of diversity within graphic design that I'm really grateful for, of like not only art and having that expressive outlet, but the ways that I'm also able to collaborate and create designs for people in the community. One of those on the left over here, I did a coffee design for Brother Buffalo and Chugach Mountain Roasters. They reached out and asked if I would do a design for their coffee bags. And it was the first time I had ever done it, and I was really grateful for the opportunity. This design in the middle is a brand kit that I did for Keeks Kwan Healing Center that's opening up over in Cake, organized by Joel Jackson. And then the possible futures for Southeast Alaska that has been passed out, I got to be a part of. I was also a part of the group that met over that year and got to be a part of some of those conversations. Really grateful for the opportunity. It was the first booklet I had actually gotten to design as well, and being given these opportunities to learn different ways of design and work with community has been really powerful, and I'm grateful. So a lot of my growing up in Juneau and where I'm at now with my business has really been access to opportunity and investment in who I was and who I am in my community. This photo up here is me at a Big Brothers Big Sisters event. I was matched with my big for 10 years, and we still see each other periodically around town. And this other photo here is I did 3 years of internships with Sea Alaska. I really credit where I am to investment in youth opportunities. I was also part of the AVID program, Advancement via Individual Determination, and it changed my life. I was in the eighth grade when the program first started, and my gym teacher, Molly Box, pulled me into the office with Annie Janes, and she was like, "We're starting this program. We want you to be a part of it, and would you be interested in it?" And I started that program in high school, and it truly, Annie Janes was such an advocate. A lot of us in my AVID program, we were coming from different backgrounds that caused us to kind of fall in the cracks a little bit, and some of us had parents that were in jail. Some of us had single parents. Some of us just didn't have the support or the guidance that we needed to be able to succeed in our education. And oh my gosh, to have that, I don't think I would have graduated high school. I don't think I would have gone on to college. I fully credit these programs to where I am. There was a moment where my teacher was just like, there's no way she's not going to graduate. And Annie Janes was like, she will be here every day. I will help her, whatever we have to do. You know, the success of our youth isn't always on their self-determination. It's what they have access to. And I'm just incredibly grateful for the community that invested in those opportunities that allowed me to be where I am today.
Mrs. Kavanaugh, could I ask a question on that former slide?
Oh, yeah.
We don't have, it's the first time I've heard of AVID program. Mm. You said the acronym, is it still going on?
Chloe Kavanaugh speaking to the chair. So they've cut back the funding for the program, and I've heard that it may or may not be still going on. I think a lot of the difficulty was they wanted all of us to get a traditional education after and see the numbers. But I think for a lot of us, the fact that we graduated was a huge milestone. I hope to see it expand more. At one point it was in the middle schools. So I hope to see it just continue to expand.
Yes, a follow-up, Representative Story.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Your testimony, Ms. Kavanaugh, warms my heart. I was on the school board when we brought AVID advancement via individual determination to our schools here in Juneau, and we had a superintendent at the time who really championed it, and he had seen how it flourished and how it came alongside students, saw the qualities in them, and just developed this cohort, so to speak, and we were able to expand some of them with monies. But then when we started to get to the budget cutting, it's very difficult and painful because lots of disagreements on the school board whether to continue the program and what levels, because of there's a cost to every program that you do, and we were seeing such great results. So yeah, we'll have to get an update on that from the current school board, but I highly recommend that program to any district who is thinking of taking on something that really empowers students, makes them, belong, gives them skills, because it's definitely about helping with post-secondary after school, and certainly you're flourishing. So thank you for bringing that up.
Nishish.
Thank you, Representative Story. Ms. Kavanaugh, please continue.
So being really grateful for the opportunities that I've been given through community and scholarships, I've really tried to incorporate education and opportunity within my business. This photo over here is when Cake reached out to me and they wanted a logo, and they asked if I would do it. And I really try when I'm working on projects that I recognize where my role is in that. Cake is where a lot of my family is from, but it isn't where I'm currently living or where I have lived. So I had this idea of, well, what if we did that a little differently, and what if someone drew out a logo and I helped them digitize it and showed them what the process of creating a logo looks like. The child who created this logo was 8 years old, and I think that's really powerful to make sure that design and logos and these opportunities are given to people that will see them every day in their community and have that sense of pride. To be 8 years old and you essentially already have a portfolio of a logo you've created is incredible. And to see the smile on his face when he knew he had won and got to see the final logo was incredible. This photo in the middle here is, I was invited to go speak to Yakus and talk about graphic design and marketing communications as an opportunity, and what it can do in the different career pathways. It wasn't something that necessarily was talked about when I was growing up, of marketing and communications and that as an opportunity. So I got to go in and talk to the class and talk to the students, and it branched off ideas of some people were like, well, you know, apparel, can I do that? Of course you can. Well, I want to be a tattoo artist. Okay, you know, iPads, here's what you could do. Meeting youth where they're at and talking about the opportunities that are out there. Consent is Sacred was a design that Guna Megan Jensen created and had reached out to me and said, you know, I really think this is important. I have this design, Consent is Sacred. Is there any way you could help me turn it into a t-shirt? And we worked together and I talked her through the process of how I would lay the t-shirt out and recommendations of placement. And it has been incredible. I talked to Guna maybe a month ago, and she wants to expand on her design and continue to design apparel. The Consent is Sacred sign was held up with her dance group at Celebration, and such a powerful message. And I'm grateful to see other Indigenous artists creating the conversations that they feel passionate about. So along the lines of those conversations, through social media and through conversations with the community, I really try to also cultivate conversations, which sometimes having conversations and being a small business can be difficult and a fine line. A couple of these conversations have been tribal government and Native corporations, what's the difference? Where can you use your tribal ID and why it matters? A lot of the time, I think we can get caught up in, well, why aren't people coming to the table and sitting at the table? Do they have a chair? Well, why aren't people having this conversation? Do they know what the conversation is about? So I really try to create these spaces of reflection and understanding, especially understanding that I'm still learning. There are things that I still, even today, coming into this meeting, knowing, okay, this is the process, this is how I can talk to my representatives. I think it's really important to give that space for people to ask questions, give that space for people to put their input out there and empower them to be those voices in their communities and ask those questions. So that's my presentation here today. Some of the other Speed of Trust document I handed out, that's also a publication that I got to help design with Shailene, Marina Anderson, and the team over at Spruce Root. There's some incredible photos included that the photographers are credited in the back. Just really grateful to, you know, be continuing to run my business, continuing to do what I do in my home community and beyond. I've had some incredible opportunities. I've been asked to speak at my college. I've been able to travel, and I've been able to really just create these spaces within my community as well. We did an art show with Pat Race. 15 Indigenous artists got to be a part of that art show, ranging from the youngest artist being 8 when he took his Procreate class with me, 10 when he got to do his art show with us, and Then we included elders in all age ranges all over the Southeast to be a part of that art show. We've done queer indigenous music pop-ups and events, and we've done we recently did a film festival showcasing two indigenous documentaries, one on the Herring Protectors and one from Ellen Bradley on being an indigenous woman in professional skiing and the importance of offering outdoor industry opportunities as a connection opportunity and the barrier it can be for indigenous people on their own land. So I'm really grateful for all these ways that I've been able to learn, grow, and have opportunity. Gunashchish.
Gunashchish, Anabasi. Thank you. I could listen to you all day. Your story is, thank you for sharing it. It's so beautiful. Are there any comments? Representative Story?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Dybert. I agree with you through the chair. Thank you for sharing your personal journey and your work, Ms. Kavanaugh. Through the chair, can you tell me a little bit about how you started your connection with Spruce Root and how they supported you?
Yeah. On the record, Chloe Kavanaugh, through the chair to Representative Story. I've taken the Indigenous Artists class through Spruce Root, which gathered a bunch of the Indigenous artists to learn about how to price things and how to promote and market and the basis of starting a business. So I've taken classes like that. And similarly, a lot of my contract opportunities have either been a connection through Spruce Root. There are small businesses through Spruce Root that are clients that I've worked with to be able to help build websites, design logos, teach them what I know. So that has been an incredible opportunity. The Possible Future Scenarios was the first time I designed a booklet. So they've been really great at also cultivating and giving me opportunities.
Thank you.
That's a great question. Representative Schwanke.
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you. This is such a great opportunity, I think, to point out a couple really important things that we as Alaskans need to be doing. Mm-hmm. One is helping youth understand their potential. Mm-hmm. And so thank you for taking the leap, because as someone who went the safe route, I went to college and I got a job with the state, and I had a wonderful job with the state, but I decided to step away and start a business a number of years ago. And I know it's very difficult being an entrepreneur. I wish that I had taken a business class at some point in time in my collegiate experience, but I never did. So I had to learn the hard way. Yeah. So my first business didn't pan out, and I was able to sell it and start a second business where I put all the lessons I learned in the first one into the second one. But I think it's really critical that we have a lot of youth in Alaska that they question their future, they question their potential. And I've spent a lot of time working with kids. I've lived in rural Alaska most of my life. My family, we hunt, we fish, we trap. And so I think it's really critical to offer a sense of community, no matter who you are, where you are. We all have backgrounds and skills and abilities that we can share with others. And so a lot of youth don't grow up, especially in rural communities, or Alaska Native youth don't have maybe that initial connection when they're young for various reasons. And so I wanted to highlight, I was really glad you mentioned kind of the Boys and Girls Club and just that initial community opportunity that you got that helped you through school. And I can't highlight that enough. I think everywhere we're at, we all need to be looking around us and figure out if there are youth that could use a helping hand and just that support, like, we got you. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to help you make it through. So whether it's a funded program or whether it's just an individual or an organization, a tribe, we all have the opportunity to engage with youth that look lost. And I think your art is actually a really phenomenal opportunity to highlight where people can make a living with art. Mm-hmm. And it's a little different. You know, there's tangible art that you can sell, specifically individual pieces, but then there's also a really important role for marketing. Mm-hmm. And I've come to the conclusion that obviously not just businesses need good marketing tools and professionals they can work with, but the government needs good marketing too, because mm-hmm. we have some great programs and opportunities. Yeah. And so I'm pretty excited about what you've done here and been able to help kids and youth take their ideas and turn them into a business, turn them mm-hmm. into an opportunity for them to maybe get their creation out in front of a larger audience. And it's pretty exciting. And I just want to encourage you and thank you for helping youth understand their potential. And everyone has really, they just need somebody to help them see their own future. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that's what you're doing. And I guess I didn't really have a question in there. I just wanted to say thank you. I'm really impressed with what you've created. And yeah, keep going, because there's so many marketing opportunities that that we need to take advantage of. And when we have a local Alaskan individual with a business like this, I think you have tremendous opportunity to connect people with markets that they didn't even know existed, and help kids enter the entrepreneurial space with a little bit of confidence and just get them out in front of the right audience. So pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I think your grandfather would be very proud of you.
Mm-hmm. I know. So.
For the record, Ms. Chloe Kavanaugh, through the chair to Representative Schwanke. I just want to say Gunashish, because I think that's exactly it, of, you know, starting from our youth up until even now, we need those people that show the potential that we could have. And I think it's the biggest barrier with marketing communications that I see is people saying, well, you know, I just don't want to be seen, or, oh, like, how do I do this? And really, I think it's such, especially in Southeast and especially in our communities across Alaska where people are isolated, really looking at it as a relationship builder is so huge, and how it can connect us as a community is just, it's so important, and it's what connects us, especially when we're so far away. So I just want to say Gunashish. Your words just mean so much to me.
Thank you.
Anabasi, I guess I have a question. I really appreciated your story of walking with someone in the community to create mm-hmm. art or their idea mm-hmm. and then capture it to turn it into a digitized piece. Mm-hmm. I think that's really great because, you know, if it is a youth, mm-hmm. which they can see themselves as, you know, not only adding to the community, but their own artistic skill mm-hmm. and highlighting that is beautiful. So I have a question. We're trying to get the message of voting out. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever been approached to help with getting our voting numbers up mm-hmm. in Alaska. And then when you work, I don't know how to say this, you know, what are the biggest dreams? Is it to be an online entrepreneur? Is it to have a brick and mortar? How do people land on where they want to be ultimately at the end of this journey? Or is it just mm-hmm. a living journey? You know, yeah. you just get to where you are. Thank you.
For the record, Chloe Kavanaugh to the chair. I've been approached to do design work for different things and people running for things in the community. And I think that's a huge thing that's been on my mind, especially I have younger siblings. One is 17, approaching 18, and another that is 21. And I think that that is another part of the opportunity there. I hear from so many voices when I go into classrooms or I do artist residencies with youth, them feeling like there is no space for them. And then that, I think that really hits voting. And I think Similarly, on that conversation slides, I think that's a big part of it, of people understanding the importance and feeling the relationship to something and seeing the real impacts. So it's something I would love to be a part of. As far as my goals with my business, I really hope to do a lot more community work, and I hope to be a part of a lot more community projects, and I want to see more opportunities for youth, and I want to see more opportunities for creating those opportunities for marketing and design and allowing people to be leaders in their communities. I did a project with ACPERG and Rochelle Adams, and we got to work with language panelists to design their posters and include language, and I felt that it was incredibly empowering to be a designer and work with people that in moments, some of them were artists and they had visions. Some of them were like, I just don't know, but I have this snowshoe that's important to me, or I have this that's really important to me. And really breaking down that idea that people tend to lean into, I'm not an artist, I'm not a creative. If you have an idea and you're executing an idea, you're an artist in your own way. So being able to help people voice what they're thinking and then take that visualization and work with them to create something and empower them of, like, the barrier may be that, yes, you don't have a graphic design background. Those are trainable things. Maybe this is your first time designing your own poster and eliminating those barriers. That's what I want to do. I want to continue to work with people. I want to continue to see an increase in that marketing communications relationship that allows us to bring more people to the table, to be a part of these conversations and feel empowered to share their story and who they are and what they want to see in their communities. Ganeshish.
Representative Carrick.
Thank you, Chair Diver. I just wanted to say thank you for this presentation. It's one thing to talk about economic development and supporting small businesses, and then to get to see how that's worked in action for you is just amazing. And I just feel kind of honored because I love those "Everyone is Welcome Here" mm-hmm. posters. I've seen them all over town. And it's really cool we get to meet the artists today. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Rep. Carrick. And I believe that is it. Any final thoughts? I just so appreciate you being here and sharing your work. I'm still going to chew on the tribal government and Native corporations mm-hmm. conversation slide. I'd like to just my own self-learning on how mm-hmm. to expand on that slide. It's such a powerful slide. Mm-hmm. Last week we had ANCSA, we had Nicole Borromeo giving us a lesson on ANCSA, and every mm-hmm. time I hear it, it's so large, and it's such a big topic to learn in one session, but to learn it through art, and that would be great. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
And with that... that completes the agenda for our meeting today. Again, a big thank you, Anabasi, to our presenters, Ms. Peterson, Anabasi, Ms. Chloe Kavanaugh. Thank you so much. For committee members, my office will be reaching out to you about next week's schedule. We'll be in touch actually later this afternoon. Okay. So for our hearing for next week. And with that, the time is 9:32 a.m., and this hearing of tribal affairs is now adjourned.